I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. The headline in the Washington Post in mid-December read, Ivanka Trump could be the most powerful first lady ever. And the woman who wrote the story is our guest this hour, Kate Anderson Brower. She is the author of First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies, and also author of The Residence, Inside the Private World of the White House. Her writing has also been featured on CNN. She covered the White House for 4 years, the Obama White House for Bloomberg News, and is a former CBS News staffer and Fox News producer. She's written for the New York Times, Vanity Fair, Time, the Washington Post, lives outside of Washington, D.C. with her husband, their two children, and of course I would have to mention this, because how often does it happen that two guests in a period of 2 months say they have a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, which I do as well. We could spend the whole hour talking about soft-coated Wheaton Terriers, but we won't do that. But we will mention the dog sometime during the course of this hour. She writes, First ladies aren't always presidential spouses, and she'll tell us about some of the interesting first ladies in our past. But she says Ivanka Trump appears to be poised as an advisor, an advocate, and a hostess all at once, which could revolutionize the role and make her the most powerful first lady ever. Of course, there is some controversy about her role, and we'll talk about that as well. Here's how you reach our conversation this hour. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Kate, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Why don't we start with a little bit of history here? We usually think, because it's been a long time since we've had a first lady who was not a presidential spouse, but there have been many, particularly if you go back 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, we've had first ladies who have been, you know, passed away long before their husbands were inaugurated, like Thomas Jefferson's wife, who died 2 decades before he was sworn in, and their daughter Martha filled in as a hostess in the White House. Grover Cleveland, before he got married, his sister filled in. So we've had nieces, sisters-in-laws, daughters take, you know, fill in this role, especially when life expectancies were so much shorter. That had a lot to do with it then. But it has been about 100 years since President Wilson's wife passed away, and for a very brief period of time, their daughter filled in for him before he remarried. So it's been a century since we've seen a presidential spouse not actively play the role, or at least, you know, pretend to play the role. And this, you know, Bess Truman wasn't a big fan of being first lady, but she did move to the White House ostensibly. So this is a new world that we're in, and it's fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm. And Edith Wilson, let's spend a moment on her, became probably the most powerful first lady ever, right?
Yeah. I mean, when President Wilson had his stroke, she you know, ran the White House. And so, yeah, she was the most powerful first lady ever, and I think it was about a year and a half before he left office that she was running the White House. Everything had to be cleared through her. And so, you know, now we see a first lady like Melania Trump who's reluctant and doesn't want to move to the White House right away. And we've had first ladies before who have shared the same sentiments. You know, Jackie Kennedy wasn't all that excited about being first lady either.
And is it, okay, let's just talk a little bit more about Melania's decision, at least for the moment, to stay in New York with her son, who is still in school. Mm. Have you heard that she really doesn't want to take on this role at all? It's hard to believe that Ivanka, once she's in this role, is going to be giving it up.
No, I mean, I don't think that it's not as clear cut as that. I think that Melania Trump will still come down for state dinners and still play the role of first lady in that sense. You know, it's not as though Ivanka can be there at a state dinner as her father's date. That would be very strange looking, I think. But the fact that that Ivanka and her husband have bought a house in Washington, you know, they're moving here. Melania is really focused on their son. And I think now you can do a lot. You know, she can come down to D.C. from New York for certain events, and she can sort of telecommute in a way. But I think the larger psychological impact of this is that people want to see their first lady engaged, I think. They want to see somebody in this privileged position really make the most of it. And so I wonder how that's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. And her position is going to be wide-ranging, it would appear. You say in the Washington Post piece that a friend of Donald Trump's told you that Ivanka and Jared and Don Jr. are more influential than any cabinet member.
Yeah, I mean, the one call that Donald Trump always takes is his daughter, and that she is the person who has a direct line to him. Jared Kushner, her husband, is hugely influential. As we've seen, he's, you know, sat in on security briefings, and he's just very a huge part of this administration. And so we haven't seen anything like that because, you know, even during the Nixon White House, Julie Nixon and her husband, David Eisenhower, they were involved, but not quite like this. They weren't, you know, helping to shape policy decisions. And I think that that's the big difference here. But the Trumps, you know, the election and the campaign, they didn't play by the rules at all. And it worked well for them. So I think their feeling is, you know, why do we have to do it the way it's always been done? We can change things up.
Ivanka, you say, fits the mold of Alice Roosevelt Longworth, President Theodore Roosevelt's first daughter. In what way does she?
Well, Alice Roosevelt Longworth was really excited about coming into the White House. And, you know, even after President McKinley was assassinated, she made an offhand remark about how excited she was.
Oh.
And that didn't look so good. You
no,
know?
I'm sure it didn't.
And, you know, and Alice Roosevelt became famous for saying, you know, if you have nothing good to say about anyone, sit next to me. Or so it was this cute line like that. So she was a gossip. She was also somebody who was really a social butterfly around Washington. So she enjoyed it in that way. I think Ivanka Trump is clearly much more controlled than that. And she doesn't say anything that, you know, I mean, one thing that Lady Bird Johnson told her daughters was, you don't say or do anything that you wouldn't mind seeing on the front page of every newspaper. And I think Ivanka, having grown up in this rarefied atmosphere, knows that already. So she's really guarded and doesn't say or do things that are all that controversial.
Mm-hmm. Although she has done some things that the press has picked up on, and it has become a bit controversial. Her meeting with the head of state, the Japanese prime minister, the also somebody else from Argentinian president as well. Why was she sitting in on those meetings, and do you expect that she will continue to do so?
I mean, she is, I think her father trusts her completely, and so I do expect that she'll continue to do so, but not in a formal way because of anti-nepotism rules. I don't think that she'll be named to the cabinet or anything like that, but I think that she'll be an informal top advisor to her father in the way a lot of wives have been in the past. If you look at Nancy Reagan, for instance, this is an incredibly influential first lady, and I think we see that with Ivanka Trump taking on that almost a Nancy Reagan kind of role, you know, weighing in on what advisors are around her father, introducing her father to Al Gore and Leonardo DiCaprio, these people who are really hugely famous environmentalists, and she played a hand in setting up that meeting. And to me, it was really incredible that Al Gore went to Trump Tower not knowing that he would even meet with the president-elect. He just went to meet with Ivanka. And here is this man who was vice president for 8 years, almost president in 2000, willing to go meet with the daughter of a president-elect just because she has so much influence. And I think that says a lot about her.
Mm-hmm. She didn't have a whole lot of influence when it came to his cabinet appointments on environmental issues, though, did she?
No. You know, and it's impossible to know, you know, the difference between what she actually thinks and what, you know, the sort of persona she's putting on. So, I mean, I don't know if she, you know, how passionately she feels about things. You know, you would think if she was able to really influence him, we would have different cabinet appointments. Yes, absolutely. But she's the softer face of the Trump White House, absolutely. You know, and I think that there have been a lot of stories written about how dangerous that is, that people think, you know, just because she reaches out to Democrats and is, you know, it sort of seems softer than her father, it doesn't necessarily mean that she's not, you know, that she's not a shrewd businesswoman herself, looking to cut deals. And maybe she is, you know, she's not a registered Republican, which is really interesting. She didn't register in time to vote for her father in the primaries in New York. She was an independent. I mean, things like that, I think, show that she is not, you know, really carved out a space for her actual beliefs. What does she actually think? Is this lip service, some of the child care tax credits, things like that she's talked about? Is it meant to soften her father's image? We don't know.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. Can you dig around and find out what she actually does think about issues? Because it would be nice to know what direction, you know, what issues would become important to her and she would act on in this new role.
Yeah, I think everybody wants to know that. You know, it's very much up in the air, you know, what she is going to do. It's you know, they're still figuring it out. So I don't know the answers.
Mm-hmm. You talk about other presidential daughters who have waded into politics, who've had to make tremendous personal sacrifice. And you talk about Julie Nixon Eisenhower's dealings with the Secret Service. They're warning her against attending her own graduation from Smith College during the Vietnam years. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And if there is, or if we've changed so much as a country that for Ivanka Trump to wade into politics would not mean that she would have to make a personal sacrifice?
I think we see that she is going to make a personal sacrifice. I mean, just when she was taking a JetBlue flight to Florida, someone came up and she was with her children and started talking about her father and sort of railing on about it. And that is totally his right to do. But when you're with your kids, I think it makes it very obvious that she's going to have to make sacrifices. And, as Michelle Obama said in an interview recently, you don't know what to even ask or look out for until you actually move into the White House. So I think that it will be a rude awakening in many ways for Ivanka Trump. I don't think that much has changed since Julie Nixon Eisenhower had to give up her having her father at her graduation at Smith. You know, I think that for someone like Ivanka Trump, it would be very it's almost a similar kind of atmosphere. The people who dislike Trump really dislike him, just in the same way that people really dislike Nixon, who hated him. You know, that group. So being the daughter of such a controversial figure, I don't think that that's gotten much easier. It's probably gotten harder with social media, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet they'll have some pretty nice parties.
Yeah, I bet. It'll be, we'll see, although they say the inauguration is going to be a pared-down affair. So, it's not going to be the 10 inaugural balls that the Obamas had. It'll be 3. And that they really want, the Trump transition wants to reach out to, the military and make the inauguration more of an inclusive affair. And I'm not really sure how they do that. But, I think that they are playing lip service to the idea that, you know, the inauguration is really for the American people, and that everyone should have a chance to be part of that.
Mm-hmm. I was amazed, Kate, how many first ladies, and maybe I'm overstating the case, so let me know what the truth is, believe that the White House really was described by them, Michelle Obama and others, as a prison, a nice prison, mm-hmm. very nice prison, but a prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really does have prison-like elements to it. That's what Michelle Obama says, at least. And I think if you put yourself in their shoes, you would feel that same way. I mean, I talked to Lucy Johnson, who describes hearing the chants of Vietnam protesters in Lafayette Square and hearing people loudly protesting against her father. And what's that like for you as his daughter to have to deal with every day? Jackie Kennedy would leave to go to horseback riding in Middleburg, Virginia every weekend. She would leave on Thursday and come back on Tuesday. I mean, these were very long weekends. There's a feeling of wanting to escape. A lot of these women who are first ladies are not necessarily public, seeking the spotlight. Someone like Bess Truman went back to Independence, Missouri all the time and would say to reporters, she would say, "You don't need to know me. I'm just the president's wife and the mother of his daughter." These are not women who want the job necessarily. So Melania is not unique in that way. It is unique that she's not just moving to D.C. at least ceremonially, you know.
Yes.
But I think because she has this young son, she has a reason not to.
Mm-hmm. Do we even know at this point how many days a week Donald Trump intends to spend living in the White House?
I don't know. I'm sure people in New York, with all the traffic being tied up on Fifth Avenue, hope he's in D.C.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
That must be really hard for people in New York.
It is. It is. I've heard a lot of people. I have family there, and it's been rough. And I think it's a real serious consideration for them. You know, I mean, even with President Obama, often I was a White House reporter, and he would take helicopters to avoid tying up traffic in major metropolitan areas. And it doesn't seem that the same is happening now. I guess it's harder because of where they are in New York, and they're like the epicenter of New York City.
You talk about, let's center on Hillary Clinton and also Rosalynn Carter. Mm-hmm. You did an interview recently with Rosalynn Carter, who talked about how she was criticized for sitting in on cabinet meetings, even though she never said a word.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Hillary Clinton got an enormous amount of negative publicity when she tried to fashion health care.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these women are damned if they do and damned if they don't. It's a really tricky situation to be in, and no matter what they do, they're going to get criticism. And Rosalynn Carter did tell me, you know, I knew I was going to be criticized no matter what I did, so I just did what I wanted to. And I think that that's an important lesson. You know, you have to develop skin as thick as a rhinoceros, as, you know, Hillary Clinton and Eleanor Roosevelt would say. You know, it's just, you can't, and I think that's what makes it very interesting looking at some of these libel suits with Melania Trump. It's that, unfortunately, as First Lady, things are going to be said and written about you that aren't necessarily true. And I think it's very hurtful, and I think it's very hard for some people to move past that. But I think it's necessary to move past it.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't let much on, though, does she? She really has the appearance of almost always being cool as a cucumber.
Melania?
No, not Melania. Ivanka.
Oh, yeah. Ivanka. Yes, yeah, she's very collected and very calm. And I think that's been a huge asset for her. She doesn't ever seem frazzled. She doesn't ever seem emotional like her father. And so I think that that will make her a huge asset. But I'm sure, you know, behind the scenes, this is a hugely, you know, difficult moment for them. Moving their three children to Washington, I'm not sure how she's going to manage her business and, you know, the conflicts of interest there. So I think that they are very guarded, though, and there's a really close circle of friends and people they trust around them. And I've talked to people who say, you know, Melania Trump doesn't have that many friends, but the people who are her friends know a lot, but they would never talk to a reporter. So it's a difficult administration, I think, to cover as a reporter.
Yes. And in terms of Melania, I guess the phrase cool as a cucumber could somewhat apply to her, except that we know so little about her. The only public dealings that I can remember are the speech at the Republican National Convention, mm-hmm. which didn't go very well,
mm-hmm.
and then the 60 Minutes, or no, yeah, I think it was 60, or it was an
yeah.
interview with Anderson Cooper I saw.
Yep.
And that's about all I've seen of her, other than she, you know, you see her standing next to her husband.
Yeah, she did a Leslie Stahl interview on 60 Minutes with all of the Trump, you know, family.
Yes, right.
Yeah, she doesn't like to do interviews. I mean, you do go look back, though, you know, Bess Truman never did a single interview as First Lady. There are some First Ladies who don't crave that attention. And so I don't think that, you know, I don't know if in the long run this is going to be a huge problem for her to not open up, because it didn't hurt her on the campaign. I always thought during the campaign that it was not a good thing that she wasn't making herself more, you know, human, because I do think that someone who is as, you know, beautiful and a former model and kind of, you know, wears designer clothes and lives in a three-story penthouse, you know, would have to work extra hard to become likable to blue-collar workers.
Yes.
But I think what we saw with this election is it doesn't matter. That the people who voted for Donald Trump don't want him to pretend to be something he's not, and they don't want her to be folksy or likable. And so I don't think that they really need to change what they're doing, because it seems to have worked. Now, I mean, as a reporter, I would like to see her do more, and I would like to see that a different side of her. So it is frustrating.
Mm-hmm. There definitely isn't much folksiness involved here.
No.
With either one of them, I would say.
No.
Let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about Ivanka Trump. Our guest says she could be the most powerful first lady ever. She's going to function in that capacity and is moving, found a house in Washington, is moving to Washington, is a very important advisor, perhaps the most important advisor to her father. So she's going to have an office in the White House and probably some influence when it comes to policy. So what kind of first lady would you like to see? And what do you think about Ivanka Trump becoming the first lady? What about Melania's being reticent to take on that role? Also, our guest has written about all the other first ladies in history. When you think of a first lady and say, she was something, I guess you have to think of Eleanor Roosevelt, who was probably one of the most powerful first ladies there was, but she did it outside the office pretty much completely, did it on her own. But who is a role model? Who is somebody who you totally admire when you think about first ladies of this country? Our guest is Kate Anderson Brower. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Residence, Inside the Private World of the White House. And she's also author of a new book, which is a New York Times bestseller, First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies. She covered the Obama White House for Bloomberg News for 4 years, former CBS News staffer, Fox News producer, and has written for a number of publications. We have phone lines open for you. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. We're also checking our Facebook page frequently and love to read your messages there, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Today is KP Whaley's last day. He heads off to North Carolina for a new job. So please go to our page and send him a little message wishing him well for all the wonderful work he's done for the past almost 4 years. We'll miss him a whole lot. So, and then there is Twitter. Of course, there is Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls for Kate, 800-486-8655. We're talking about first ladies in history, the role that Ivanka Trump will play, the controversies. There are some about her conflicts of interest and the role she will have as an advisor to the president. Do you see any problems with that? Do you see conflicts of interest with her business? Do you think it's a good idea for somebody who really wants to be this multifaceted person in the White House? Is a good thing rather than somebody who doesn't particularly care for the job, which is Melania Trump. And when you think of wonderful first ladies in history, who do you think about? Who had captured the nation's fancy? 800-486-8655. We start our calls with Kay in Madison. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hi.
I am wondering and interested if you know much about Ivanka's mother, Ivana Trump, and whether personality-wise and business sense-wise, if they're more similar. Because I always heard that Trump didn't spend a lot of time with his children when they were growing up.
That's true. I mean, that's a great question. Ivanka dedicated one of her books to her nanny who raised her, actually.
Really?
So, yeah, so very close relationship with her nanny and also with her mother. And I've just been thinking about Ivana because she's almost like the queen mother, you know. She's this mythic figure that they all know, and the Trumps are, you know, the mother of three of the most famous Trump children, and yet we don't hear or see much from her. I mean, their divorce was incredibly acrimonious, you know, in New York, and that she has really stayed in the background and not publicly spoken much about her husband. So, you know, I think that deserves a lot of research. I wish I knew more about where Ivana Trump stands. I think that, you know, Ivanka being so close to her mother and being raised mostly by her mother, if her mother was very against her being part of this, I think she wouldn't be part of it. So I think that her mother is supportive of her. But I agree. I'm fascinated by Ivana. I would love to know more about what she actually really thinks.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that Ivanka, of all the children, seems to be the most favored to be in this highly coveted role?
I think it's because, well, she wants it the most. I think she's very, very ambitious. She's been building her brand for years. Her brothers are also, I mean, Donald Jr. Is really involved, too. I think Eric is also, but slightly less so. And then Tiffany, of course, you know, she just graduated from college. So it makes sense that Ivanka wants to play this role. She is, you know, a daddy's girl, has been intensely loyal to him, even as her brother, Donald Trump Jr., didn't speak to his father for a period of time after the divorce. It seems that Ivanka has stayed loyal to him through it all, and that must have been really embarrassing for her, having her parents, you know, on the front page of every New York tabloid. But, you know, she's incredibly loyal to him, and I think it makes sense that she wants to play a role. I mean, this is, I think one of the interesting things about this White House is that we have the oldest president in history. He's older than Ronald Reagan was when he was sworn in, slightly. And so his children are older. And in the recent history, we've had, you know, teenagers like Jenna and Barbara Bush, Sasha and Malia, really young. And so now you have some kids that are well into their careers. And I think that that makes a big difference.
Thanks, Kay, so much for your call. Margaret in Iowa. Hello, Margaret.
Hi. Say, I saw an interview with Mr. Trump and his daughter on some television show during the election. And the question was, what do they have most in common? And she said that it was real estate, and he said it was sex. And that has creeped me out ever since. I mean,
I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, what? Did they go on to explain that?
That must have been Howard Stern, right? Because he did a bunch of interviews with Howard Stern over the years, and some of the things he said, you know that if she wasn't his daughter, he'd be dating her and things like that. That's a very strange thing to say. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it's truly, you can't imagine any other president saying anything like that before. And I think the fact that he's been in the public eye for so long and would go on Howard Stern so regularly and talk about really embarrassing, intimate things, we've never seen that before in a president.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Margaret?
Well, I just, you know, it just, I hate to imply anything, but it just makes you think of a pedophile.
It was a strange thing to say. There's no doubt about that. How does she deal with Ivanka? Because he probably will steer away from some of the more salacious things that he said on Howard Stern and you know, Access Hollywood tapes, et cetera. I would imagine he's going in a different direction. But how has she responded to those kinds of comments? Does she just not respond, passes them off? I'm sure she's been asked about this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I think she's very wisely not weighed in much on it. The Access Hollywood tape, when it was leaked, I think it took her a couple of days to say anything about it. And I think she said something about it, her father, you know, being embarrassed, and she's never heard him speak like that before in her presence, you know. So I think she's defensive of him. This is her dad, you know. And she says, you know, I'm his daughter first. I think that there is a very human side to this. You know, but the problem that she's going to face is if she is injecting herself as a serious political advisor to her father, she is going to be then held accountable for some of his policies and some of the things that he's doing. And so unlike Chelsea Clinton, who was 12, 13, 14 years old, you know, Ivanka Trump is 35 years old. And if somebody is angry at a policy that her father is going to be enforcing, if she's involved in it, they should be able to say something to her. I mean, you can't have it both ways. And I think that's something that's really going to be tough for her. You cannot be on a pedestal and then be getting down into the mud and actually, you know, making policy and sort of, you know, manipulating and doing all the arranging meetings and doing all the things she does. So she's going to face some really serious questions, I think, about what exactly her role is in this White House.
And what about her husband's role in the White House?
You know, I interviewed somebody, it was a background interview. It's a very, somebody who worked in the Bush administration. And all I know is that they see Jared Kushner as a top,
you know, maybe the top political advisor next to Mike Pence. And then Reince Priebus and, you know, Steve Bannon below that as sort of the inner circle. He is going to be incredibly influential. He is a successful businessman, real estate developer like Donald Trump, came from a wealthy family like Donald Trump. And so there are a lot of similarities there between Jared Kushner and his father-in-law.
Thanks very much for your call, Margaret. We go to Nancy next in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good afternoon. It has been widely noted that Melania speaks 5 or 6 languages. It is my own personal thought, after hearing her struggle with English, that because she's from Slovenia, which was once, of course, part of Yugoslavia, I'm wondering if she simply doesn't speak many dialects of her own native language, and that when Donald married her, he interjected this thought that he had married this fabulous, beautiful model who speaks 5 languages as a way of amplifying her attributes. But so I'm wondering if your guest might know, you know, does she really speak all of these languages, or is her language ability really confined to speaking the dialects of her own language?
I think she really does speak these languages because she did live in Italy, modeling, you know, France. You know, she was exposed to these other languages as a model. You know, but I don't think that necessarily speaking several languages means that you're a brilliant person either. I mean, I think it's just that she's picked up these languages along the way, and she's, you know, being from Slovenia, you can't expect everyone to speak your language. So I think that it's more common for people there to speak other languages. But I do think that you're right that it's something that he uses to kind of show her intelligence and how cosmopolitan she is. And I don't necessarily think that those two things go hand in hand. But anyway, I do think she speaks all those languages, but I'm not sure how well she speaks them.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Ivanka taking over the role as First Lady? Do you think that's a good idea, Nancy?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I think she's putting herself in somewhat of a dangerous position, and I certainly think it's going to be harder for Melania when she finally does move to the White House to insert herself, because Ivanka may be so firmly established by that time. It may cause friction within their own family structure.
Mm-hmm. You know, my first book is called The Residence, and so I interviewed a bunch of maids and butlers and cooks at the White House, and I've talked to them since then about how they feel about the Trumps moving into the White House. And one former staffer said, you know, that the staff is breathing a sigh of relief because not having a first lady there, you know, looking over your shoulder all the time, controlling everything, could be a good thing for them. It means that they won't have to answer to Melania Trump right away if she takes a hands-off approach. But I agree with, I think, the sentiment that your caller has here, is that I think it does mean something for the First Lady to move to Washington symbolically. I think it's a good thing. I think it's an incredible platform, and, you know, someone like Rosalynn Carter or Barbara Bush, I mean, these are women who I interviewed who said they loved every minute and they would move back in a heartbeat. And so to scoff at this opportunity or to not take advantage of it, I could see where people would think that was not a good thing. But then again, she can say that they have their 10-year-old son and she wants to stay in New York with him. So, and I don't think that anybody would begrudge her that for a few months. But I do think eventually she will have to move to D.C.
And the press is going to put Ivanka front and center as being the first daughter, and she'll be playing a prominent role in the inauguration and the parties. And the first 100 days are very important days in establishing what this White House is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it took Michelle Obama months to figure out what her signature issue would be in the Let's Move campaign, and became that. And she went through, you know, she had more chiefs of staff than Laura Bush did. So she was cycling through people, and I interviewed her first chief of staff, Jackie Norris, who described to me, you know, how difficult those first few months are. And then the tension between the East Wing and the West Wing advisors and all of that. So if you don't have a first lady there with a strong, you know, backbone, sticking up for her staff, trying to find an issue that's going to be inspiring for the American people,
and that she can actually do something with, like the Let's Move campaign, then I think that the East Wing is going to be really devoid of power even more than it's ever been, which to me is a sad thing.
How much of a turnover is there in the White House staff when a new administration comes in, Kate?
Oh, there's no turnover.
Really?
No turnover. Yeah, I was just taping something with some resident staffers who I interviewed for my first book, and you know they are, you know, I was talking to them. They all know each other. They have stayed on, you know, resident staffers, so the maids and the butlers at the White House typically stay on for 30 years or so, and they are not political at all. And so they're really loyal to the institution of the presidency, and I think that that's pretty incredible. And I got to know many of them working on my first book, and I still can't figure out if they were Democrats or Republicans. One of them called himself an independent Republican, you know, and they don't, you know, they do vote, but they don't tell you who they vote for. And I think that's important.
That would be one hard thing to do, wouldn't it? To keep your own opinions totally silent for 30 years.
Yes. And they do, and they don't vote based on the character of the person. They don't, I mean, it's very, even if, if they love a certain president, a lot of them really liked President Reagan because he was very chatty, and they really liked H.W. Bush. But some of the people who liked those two presidents didn't necessarily vote for them. So I think it just, they want what's best for the country. And so I think the resident staffers, it's just a really interesting story because they're going to go through this transition and feel it in a really personal way, much more than any of us are going to ever feel it, because
yes,
they work
are.
For these people every day.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, thanks for your call. Justin in Minnesota. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hey, I was listening to the conversation, and I can't help but think it's kind of naive of people to think that any of the females in Donald Trump's life actually have any say in anything. I mean, he's exhibited the signs of alpha male and an extreme misogynist. So I don't think that any of the women in his life are going to make any difference. I think he rides the curtails of beautiful women in their careers.
Well, I mean, I think that his daughter might be the only exception to that rule, because he sees himself and his daughter. I mean, there are some men who speak about women in the ways that we've heard him speak about women, who, when it's their own wife, their own daughter, they feel differently towards them. And I think particularly the Ivanka relationship. I mean, you know, I've spoken to people who are close to this dynamic, and they say that it is real. It is real. He will always take her calls. He will always take her advice. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that's the case here with Ivanka. I don't know about Melania. That's a different story.
It's interesting because it is true that he doesn't have the best of history here with women, and to have this daughter be the closest advisor in many senses, always taking the phone call, really does give a different picture of who Donald Trump is with most women.
Yeah, but yes. But if you look at your daughter as a piece of yourself, then I think that that might explain that a little bit more, and why he treats her differently than he's treated other women.
Thanks, Justin, for your call. Let's go to Steve. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. And we're talking about Ivanka Trump as the First Lady. Kate Anderson Brower is our guest, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Residence, Inside the Private World of the White House. Her new book, a New York Times bestseller, First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies. Steve in Madison. Hi.
Hi, I have a question. I read a story recently that says that Ivanka took time off from her father's campaign in August to spend time with a woman whose name is Wendy Murdoch, the ex-wife of Rupert Murdoch. Wendy happens to be, according to this article, a girlfriend of Vladimir Putin. Do you have any information as to how true that story is?
I don't. I know that they are friends, though. And I don't know more information about that. That's a very interesting point. I didn't make that connection between Putin and Wendy Murdoch and Ivanka Trump. But it's interesting because when I wrote this book, Ivanka Trump was not on the radar at all, right? So I was doing interviews in 2014, 2015. People thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win. So everything, like most people in the press, you know, I was focusing on the Clintons and what that would mean and having a first gentleman in the White House and how that's going to change the role forever. And I think that everyone, you know, everything's been thrown into a bit of chaos because now we're considering a whole new family and really having to build sources and people around them that you never would have thought you'd had to before. So so I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you know where you read it, Steve?
Yeah, but I've got that source downstairs. I don't have it with me right now.
Okay.
But the thing that bothers me with the story, though, is that if there is some truth to it, that it stirs up the worries that we've had all along with some sort of a connection between Putin and the shenanigans that went on during the election.
Right.
That was my worry.
Yeah, well, that worry will continue. I'm sure that story is by no means over. When you talk about friends, her being friends with Wendy Murdoch, who do Jared and Ivanka associate with? Who are their friends?
Well, again, I'm not an expert on Ivanka Trump, unfortunately, so I don't really know. I mean, I don't know all of her friends in New York. I know she's friendly with Chelsea Clinton, but I don't know and Wendy Murdoch. I don't know much beyond that.
Let's go to Patricia in, thank you, by the way, Steve, for your call. Patricia in Madison. Hi.
Hi there. I guess I've been confused even during the political campaigns and that when the Trump family has been there. Just who is Tiffany? She may be Trump's daughter, but who's the mother?
Marla Maples. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize that he had a child with her.
Yeah.
That was a short deal, wasn't it? They were together a couple of years.
Yeah, not that long. It is interesting that Melania is going to be the first lady with a prenup, and I think that's kind of interesting. He's had prenups with all of his wives, and he publicly talked about this in an interview, that they did get a prenup. So, you know, we've never seen that before either. Among the many firsts with Melania, that's another one.
Mm-hmm. And have we heard it all from Marla Maples? And is Tiffany, was she raised, I would imagine, as the Trump children were, by their mother more than their father?
Yeah, she was with her mother a lot. And, I mean, people have talked about her not being given as much attention as
yes.
Ivanka. And I think that's a tricky situation for her, especially since their marriage was much shorter. And the Marla Maples affair, you know, it was just a little bit, it was very controversial when he, you know, got a divorce from Ivana, and then had before the divorce had been having this affair. It was kind of a little tawdry and all over the New York tabloids at the time. So I think that makes it harder for Tiffany, and she's younger too.
Thanks, Patricia, for your call. Tom in Amherst. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you for getting me on. My question is, when the press or anybody else comes down on his daughter really hard about something, is he going to do something dumb without thinking, or I'll take the answer off the air? Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. What was his question?
If the press comes down really hard on Ivanka, what will be her father's reaction?
Oh, gosh. I'm sure it will be not good. I mean, think about what happened with Truman and people were making fun of his daughter's piano playing.
Yes.
And he got so upset and was swearing, and it's ridiculous. His reaction got him in some hot water, and I think people look at that as kind of a juvenile response to it, but in history, looking back at it. But I can imagine that Donald Trump would be absolutely livid if really scathing stories came out about Ivanka. And that's another thing about the litigiousness of the Trumps. I think that there is a story to be done about the rules. You know, can a president sue a private citizen? Can a first lady sue a private citizen? They do have this lawsuit now against the blogger in Maryland and the Daily Mail that Melania brought because the specifics of it, I don't have the wording in front of me, but it's a lawsuit that she's pursuing, and she did appear. Melania appeared in court here in Maryland, actually, a few weeks ago to meet the judge and to make it clear that she was continuing with this case. So, again, I think this goes to the idea that once you're in the White House, it's just not it's just not done to sue private citizens and to try to, you know, change the libel laws that are so much a part of the First Amendment. So I think that that is going to be something that comes up, and that'll be interesting to watch.
Well, he's going to have to get a much tougher skin because the press is going to be, this was a very unusual election. He's an unusual president. It's hard to think of another similar to him in our history. He's going to be under a lot of scrutiny, and a lot of people are going to say things that aren't very kind about him, and he doesn't have a history of taking criticism well.
Right. I mean, he sued that one author because in his book, he underestimated the amount of money he had or something, you know, and then he sued Bill Maher for Bill Maher saying, you know, that his mother was an orangutan or something ridiculous that Bill Maher said. But some of these things that are jokes that are mean or things that are mean-spirited. I mean, when you are, you know, look at the Clintons. There was a lot written about them when they were in the White House.
Right.
There's a lot said about the Obamas now and the Bushes. And you, in this position, you do not, it's just, it's not presidential to go ahead and sue reporters.
I wouldn't think so. you, what you said just gives you pause. What you think. You're right.
Right.
That is right, Kate.
Yeah, and you worry even saying that, oh, does that come across as too, but I mean, of course that's true, and that should go without saying, right? So I think watching what the White House Correspondents Association does, you know, and I have friends who are on it, and how they deal with this administration, I think that's going to be the next thing to look at.
Kate Anderson Brower, our guest, we're talking about first ladies in history, and Ivanka Trump's, not unusual if you look at 100 years ago when the spouses were not always the first ladies. It looks as though Ivanka Trump is going to fill that role, but she's also a chief advisor, so it's a multifaceted, very powerful role in the Donald Trump administration. We're talking about that this hour with Kate. Her latest book is First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies. Our number is 800-486-8655. We have lines open for you right now, so give us a ring. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go back to phone calls, 800-486-8655. Will in Madison, hi.
Good afternoon. So I'm really taken back by, all the family insiders that are going into the Trump administration. And so I'm wondering if your guest can perhaps offer insights as to what other countries look like this. I can't think of any, at least none of the major Western powers. And, I have to start thinking of small kingdoms.
I think it is highly unusual. If you do look at, for instance, the very insular Nixon White House, when President Nixon was leaning on David Eisenhower, his son-in-law, for advice and support during Watergate, we have had families where the children do play a role in support during times of crisis. And like I said, I think part of this is because we haven't had adult children in the White House for so long that we haven't really seen this. I mean, the Carters had kids, but those kids were not, you know, they weren't involved in policy at all. I think the fact that they are bringing their family in raises a lot of red flags for people. And, I can't think either of another democracy where that's happened. There's always that separation. But I did reach out, and I have talked to people in Trump world about, and this reminds me, about Melania, and they are very defensive and very, they do say that Melania is going to play a big role as First Lady, and that to say that Ivanka Trump is taking on that role is incorrect. So they fight back against this notion that, but if you just look at what we're seeing.
Yes.
It doesn't seem like that's the case. We haven't seen Melania, since that 60 Minutes interview right after the election, she's really gone into hiding. So there is a void there, and that's why I think Ivanka will fill that void. But that's a good question. This is uncharted territory here.
Mm-hmm. And when you think of the most admired First Lady in our history, who is it?
Probably Eleanor Roosevelt.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, Jackie Kennedy, it's astounding to think she was 31 when she moved into the White House and what she went through. And, the whole Camelot you know, myth that she created, but also just the dignity and the grace that she exhibited during the, you know, her husband's funeral. And I mean, that's something that's very hard to match in history. And I know, for instance, Nancy Reagan was friendly with Jackie Kennedy and really wanted to be as glamorous as Jackie Kennedy was. So I think Melania Trump would be wise to reach out to some of the first ladies who came before her, because this is a sisterhood, and these are the only people who know what this is like. And Laura Bush and Michelle Obama are friends. You know, Lady Bird Johnson was very close with Betty Ford, and this cuts across party lines.
And, yeah. And on that note, we'll see what is ahead. Kate, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Kate Anderson Brower, her latest book is First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Families. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls. News is up soon.